This is Radio Superior 1954, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around, campers. Tim Michaels here, lighting the campfire. It's Wednesday, April 14th, 1954. Lou Martin has the scoop on the poop. The labor guy's in, so is Rapid Ray with the sports, and we're going smelting.
What did you call my news?
I've got the lowdown on the best place to go for those silvery delights, and I've got the equipment and the talent.
Now, that's my equipment you're using, and as for talent, that's got to be God-given. And he skipped you on every kind of fishing skill imaginable.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm telling you right now.
I could catch a smelt.
You couldn't catch a smelt.
Mayhem thing you've got going there, Tim.
Instead of a net, I could pitch their little head and pick them up out of the
sea.
This is why I love radio. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Olinow Appliance and Superior. See the 1954 Admiral 21-inch TV for just $179. Your turn at the campfire, Lou.
Be quiet. Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. The top American atomic scientist is accused of a security risk. American cities are in H-bomb peril from Soviet attack. And new polio tests may save the lives of thousands of children. We begin our world report from New York.
This is Hightower in New York. The New York Times says famed physicist Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer, who directed the making of the first atomic bomb, has been suspended on security grounds by the Atomic Energy Commission. A panel of the AEC's Personnel Security Board, headed by University of North Carolina President and former Army Secretary Gordon Gray, started hearings on the case today. Meanwhile, the dispatch by James Reston from Washington says Oppenheimer has been denied access to all government security documents. Oppenheimer directed the atomic bomb project at Los Alamos, New Mexico, during World War II. He is one of the world's foremost atomic physicists. The Times story says most of the charges against the 50-year-old Oppenheimer have been reviewed by the Atomic Energy Commission, the White House, and the Departments of Justice, State, and Defense. They cover the last 12 years. The newspaper says the main charges are that he has associated frequently with communists in the early 1940s, including his brother Frank and Frank's wife, that he fell in love with one communist and married a former communist, and that he contributed to the communist causes from 1940 to April of 1942. Second, he hired communists or former communists at Los Alamos. Third, gave contradictory testimony to the FBI about attendance at communist meetings in the early 1940s. Fourth, rejected as traitorous an attempt by an alleged communist to get scientific information from him for the Soviet Union, but failed to report the incident to government security officers for many months. Fifth, opposed the development of a hydrogen bomb in 1949 when he was chairman of the AEC's advisory committee and lobbied against it after President Truman ordered the AEC to proceed with the project. In New York, this is John Hightower.
This is Don Whitehead in Toronto. Hydrogen bomb explosions could pollute the air with radioactivity lasting several thousand years. University of Toronto Physics Department Dr. Carl Buckthought expressed his view in a letter to Canada's United Nations representative, D.M. Johnson. He says destruction of civilization is the inevitable outcome of atomic war. He wrote that explosion of a bomb of the hydrogen type in the air will produce carbon-14 with a half-life of 5,000 years. Every such explosion pollutes the air with radioactivity effective for several millennia. Dr. Buckthought said if radioactivity were introduced into the jet stream, which extends for thousands of miles with winds of up to 100 to 200 miles per hour at the height of 20,000 feet, it might reach the west coast of North America from Pacific testing grounds within a day, and its still active isotopes might inflict radiation sickness and atom burns on millions of people. In Toronto, this is Don Whitehead, AP.
London calling, Webb Miller, your correspondent. The United States and Britain warned today that communist aggression threatens the peace of Southeast Asia. They called for a military alliance of nations to safeguard the region from further red penetration. The decision to press for a formation of a new Southeast Asia defense system was announced in a joint British-American communique after a two-day conference between U.S. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles and British leaders. A top-ranking American official says Dulles is very satisfied with the outcome and felt the talks, quoting, went far towards establishing the unity of purpose which he sought on Southeast Asian defense. Dulles is leaving by plane for Paris to line up France in what officials say might become a Southeast Asia NATO. The communique says, we deplore the fact that on the eve of the Geneva conference, the communist forces in Indonesia are increasingly developing their activities into a large-scale war against the forces of the French Union. They seek to overthrow the lawful government of Vietnam, which we recognize, and they have invaded Laos and Cambodia, unquote. In London, this is Webb Miller reporting.
This is New York. Stan Turner, United Press. Several experienced Western diplomats in Moscow believe the present system of collective rule in the Soviet Union will not last long. That is the report brought here today by a Western diplomatic official who left Moscow recently. He believes the equilibrium among the Soviet leaders who now run the USSR on a committee basis is an uneasy one. There is an impression among the Western diplomatic corps that Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, Nikita Khrushchev, is the leading party boss, and it's believed he is pushing himself forward in the Kremlin ruling clique. Diplomats lack inside information on the relations between Premier Georgi Melnikov and Khrushchev. The outward aspects of such relations might, in any case, be deceiving. It was always thought that Lavrenti Beria and Melnikov were close collaborators. This did not prevent their falling out when the time came. Elementary political sense requires that now, at last, the concessions to the public's urgent demand for a better standard of living be expanded. This means more consumer goods and foodstuffs, more housing, more of everything for the populace. But this means diverting resources away from the military. This dictates that the Soviet government must try to ease tensions with the West. Soviet leadership would like to do just this, but does not want to give up anything which it has. In New York, this is Stan Turner.
This is Joel Anderson in Atlantic City. A simple new test can answer the $64 question whether the Salk polio vaccine actually creates protection against polio. It can show whether the vaccine shots create antibodies in the blood against all three types of polio virus, a team of University of Minnesota scientists said today. Dr. Jonas Salk's polio vaccine will be given this spring to up to 1 million children. Many will be given blood tests before and after taking the shot to see if the vaccine gives them protective amounts of antibodies. Dr. Salk can make such a test by using monkey kidney tissue to grow virus on. Earlier diagnosis of polio could permit earlier treatment to help avoid severe reactions from the polio invasion. In Atlantic City, this is Joel Anderson.
Television will give the forthcoming McCarthy Army hearings the same full treatment it gave the Kefauver Crime Committee. Every detail of those hearings was put on the air, and beginning April 22nd, the TV networks will run morning and afternoon relays of the investigation from the Senate office building in Washington. They've set tentative times of 10:30 a.m., 7:30 p.m., and will add coverage as necessary. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from O&L Appliance.
Hey, O&L Appliance invites you to a 1954 Admiral Grand Open House, which ends on Saturday. Listen to some of these prices. You get the lowest price ever for a brand new Admiral 21-inch TV, only $179.95. How about this? A 21-inch TV Admiral 1954 with radio phonograph combination at only $299.95. Need a refrigerator? They've got some deals for you. Get yourself an Admiral refrigerator, one capacity only, $195.40. Come on in and check that out today. Or an Admiral dual temp, never needs defrosting, at only $537.45. Those are just some of the buys, and don't forget you can register for free prizes. First prize, ladies or man's $100 diamond ring. Second prize, $45 set of aluminum ware. And third prize, $25 set of cutlery, absolutely free. You need not be present to win. So don't miss the big 1954 Admiral Open House that ends on Saturday at O&L Appliance at Broadway and Tower, Superior. Lou?
State Democrats are pushing the Joel Musk Gold Club. John Paul reports from Madison.
The Joe Must Go movement, designed to bring about the recall of Senator McCarthy from office, has the official endorsement of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. By unanimous vote, the party's administrative committee adopted a resolution by Henry Royce of Milwaukee. The resolution says, in part, that, quote, "It is our responsibility to assist in any way we can this movement, while recognizing this is a project that necessarily transcends party lines," unquote. Officers of the Joe Must Go Club say they will print recall petitions in Wisconsin newspapers. Treasurer Carl Lachmund says that to date about $4,000 has been contributed. The newspaper recall petitions will cost $15,000. Also today at the Capitol, three former governors and the current governor met for the unveiling of portraits of two former governors. Portraits are of former Governor Oscar Rennebohm and Philip La Follette. Also present were former Governor Fred Zimmerman and current Governor Walter Kohler. In Madison, this is John Powell speaking.
The navigation season at the head of the lakes begins today. A Canadian freighter cleared the harbor at 4:58 a.m. with a cargo of barley. Aerial bridge operators say that the tug Mantadoc of Ontario pulled the freighter up to the Globe Elevator dock at 7 a.m. The elevator is left of the foot of Banks Avenue, going north toward St. Louis Bay. A shiny new Madeline Island ferry is beginning service. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story from La Pointe.
Now that the navigation season is open, Captain Howard Russell of La Pointe has plans to pilot his new steel car ferry, the Garhau 2, from its winter berth at Two Rivers through Lake Michigan and Lake Superior to its new port on Madeline Island. The Garhau 2 will carry mail, autos, and passengers from Bayfield to the Madeline Island city. The vessel is the culmination of plans announced 3 years ago but delayed because of restrictions on steel. Named for Russell's two sons, Gary and Howard, the craft will replace the Garhau 1, a smaller craft known to the many who have been using the ferry to the island since 1941. Just inches short of 65 feet, the new craft can carry 7 cars and has capacity for 150 passengers. For inclement weather, there is an enclosed cabin. For balmy days, there are 2 decks. Above this tower is the pilot house. The ferry is especially designed for ice breaking, as several weeks of the year the boat will operate through ice fields. For many years, Captain Russell has maintained the year-round service from Bayfield to the island, if not with a car ferry, then by motorized sleds when the ice bridge freezes up. This is in a contract with the government to haul mail. When the ice bridge is unsafe, an airplane is used. For the past 12 years, Russell has had the Garhau 1 for a time operating with a younger brother, James, who was killed in an island plane crash a few years ago. The first car is said to have been transported on the Liberty, a craft built on Madeline Island and used to ferry people to the mainland and put in service for many years. At one time, boats towed barges on which the cars were carried. Then there was Ring 2 and the Faithful. Lou?
Thanks, Mike Simonson, reporting by long-distance line from La Pointe on Madeline Island. And that, Tim, is the news. And I don't appreciate the way you characterize my news.
But every newsman likes to be told they got a scoop.
Scoop is fine. It's the other words I don't care for.
Okay. No more Lou Martin has the scoop on the poop.
I appreciate that.
Newsmen are so sensitive. All right, campers, let's get the scoop on the weather for this Wednesday, April 14th, 1954. Starry, twinkly skies tonight with a low of 38. That's great for the campfire kids. Then sunny and warmer tomorrow with a high of around 71. Now let's shake a toe or two with Les Paul and Mary Ford and How High the Moon on the Gather Round Show. We'll be right back. Les Paul and Mary Ford asking that old question, how high the moon on KUWS. Well, campers, make a campfire in front of the TV tonight. Okay, that's probably dangerous and would make the non-campers in the household mad, so just settle in and tune in WDSM-TV CBS Channel 6. At 6:30 tonight, it's Comedy Capers. 7 o'clock, watch Family Theater. Then at 8:30, they've got Wrestling with Jack McKenna. Maybe he'll be grappling WDSM newsman Bob Ball. I don't know. And at 9:30, it's By Request, which sounds like they don't have really any idea what's going on, which is what happens when I have a request show. At 10 o'clock, it's the news with Bob Ball. 10:15 Sports with Lute Mason. He'll probably have the whole story about the McKenna-Ball match, unless Ball has it on the news, which means he killed McKenna. And then there'll be an opening in the news and weather at WDSM. At 10:25, it's the weather with Jack McKenna, unless Bob Ball put him in the hospital. And then at 10:30, it's Night Owl Theater. And that's what's coming up on WDSM-TV Channel 6 tonight.
I have no idea how your mind works, but it's miraculous.
Well, thank you. Well, you're special, too. Now, it's time to twiddle our D's. Here's George Gibbs and Tweedly D on KUWS.
Mercy, mercy.
George Gibbs and Tweedly D on KUWS.
Brudda, you know it smells like rubber and fish in here? What's the deal?
Rubber fish?
Not rubber fish. Rubber and fish. It smells like both. I means to tell you, it kind of stinks in here. No offense.
Well, as long as you don't think that it's me.
That stinks.
That stinks.
We're here for you, Timothy. Don't worry about it. Got your back, buddy.
And don't mix up our waiters. Keep your stuff in your pile, and I'll keep mine in my pile. We got to stay organized here.
Well, your hip waiters are they're huge at the hip part. I didn't realize you were so sick in the posterior.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with my posture.
What gives?
They're getting ready to go smelting.
They're gonna refine ore into steel?
No smelting, as in the silvery fish. It's become a big deal every spring for the past couple of years.
Oh, look, it's that fellow traveler. I bet you don't even know what smelting is. Good Americans know smelting is.
How does fishing make me a better American?
It's part of my good American checklist. I mean, you must like mom, baseball, apple pie, fishing, and be a Republican.
Democrats can't be good Americans?
Only if they vote Republican.
Anyway, Mr. Fisher.
I'm here to tell you about a way to unite Duluth and Superior and get some big-time jobs at the same time. It's all about building a new, high-level, toll-free bridge to replace the interstate toll bridge. One has only to read the news regarding the building of the $98 million Straits of Mackinac Bridge to realize how critical the economic success of this bridge means to us. Building a bridge connecting Duluth and Superior will mean a cash outlay of at least $10 million. It'll mean moving boats, cranes, barges, and cement mixes to build the high-level bridge. It'll mean erection of office buildings and opening bank accounts. There is a surplus of all available labor at the present time, and I means to tell you, it isn't economical to waste the labor of our brothers and sisters in organized labor. The bridge is needed. We have the labor. Let's build a bridge.
Superior Federation of Labor Editor, Jay Fisher.
A couple more things there, Lou. All you hard-working teachers, you got a shindig coming up in a week at the Android Hotel, the Teachers Federation Dinner Dance. There's a speaker coming up all the way from Milwaukee, and a popular orchestra will play after dinner. And Coal Dock Workers 1343 meets Thursday. Stanley Carter says don't miss it, or you'll get coal in your stocking for Christmas. And that's a Coal Dock Workers joke.
Those Coal Dock Workers are such kidders. Thanks, Labor Guy. For you union campers out there, here's Lonnie Donegan and Rock Island Line on the Tim Michaels Gather Round Show.
Now, this here's a story about the Rock Island Line. The Rock Island Line, she runs down into New Orleans. And just outside of New Orleans, there's a big toll gate. And all the trains, they go through the toll gate while they gotta pay the man some money. But of course, if you got certain things on board, you're okay, you don't have to pay the man nothing. And just now, we see a train, she coming down the line. And when she come up near the toll gate, the driver, he shout down to the man. He say, I got pigs, I got horses, I got cows, I got sheep, I got all livestock, I got all livestock, I got all livestock. And the man say, well, you all right, boy, just get on through, you don't have to pay me nothing. And the train go through. And when he go through the toll gate, the train get up a little bit of steam and a little bit of speed. And when the driver think he's safely on the other side, he shout back down the line to the man. He said, I fooled you, I fooled you. I got pig iron, I got pig iron, I got old pig iron. Now I'll tell you where I'm going, boy. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride, yes. The Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find to get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. I may be right, may be wrong. You know you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride, yes. The Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find to get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. Hallelujah, I'm safe from sin. Lord, come and go to see me again. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yeah, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. And if you won't, you find it, gotta ride it like you find it, get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. A, B, C, W, X, Y, Z. Cat's on the cover, but he don't see me. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line
the rock on the line. Feel the mind, you can roll it, eat your bones. Ride it, got it, ride it like you're fine. Get your dicky, that's the station on the rock on the line. Rock on the line, feel the mind, you can roll. Rock on the line, you're out to ride. Yeah, the rock on the line. Feel the mind, you can roll it, eat your bones. Ride it, got it, ride it like you're fine. Get your dicky, that's the station on the rock on the line.
Lonnie Donegan and Rock Island Line on KUWS. Rapid Ray Paulson has the sporting news. Nice, floppy, wrinkled, worn, faded hat, Ray.
It's my old fishing hat.
Your old ratty fishing hat.
Golf clothes are supposed to be garish. Fishing hats are supposed to be comfortable.
Works for me. Hope it brings you good luck smelting.
Never misses. Hey, fans of the sporting world. Sam Snead gambled with the graveyard of golf today on the usually unlucky 13th hole at Augusta National, and he won the Masters. Snead had 70, Ben Hogan 71, in an 18-hole playoff dribbling with drama. They finished the regulation 72 holes yesterday, tied at 289, highest ever to win a Masters. The victory made Slammin' Sammy the second man ever to win the Masters three times, putting him even with Jimmy DeMeritt and depriving Ben Hogan of the same honor. It was the first head-to-head meeting of these two, dubbed by golfing great Bobby Jones as the two greatest golfers in the world since 1950. Pint-sized Montreal goalie Jerry McNeil has his hockey mad city convinced that they can defend the Stanley Cup against the challenging Detroit Red Wings. McNeil returned to the net Sunday night after a two-month absence and blanked the Red Wings one zip in sudden-death overtime in Detroit. A loss would have forced Montreal to relinquish Lord Stanley's trophy since the Wings were up 3-1. The New York Yankees are a solid choice for a sixth straight pennant when they open the 1954 campaign at Griffith Stadium in D.C. tomorrow. President Eisenhower will toss out the first pitch. Casey Stengel will start Whitey Ford for the Bronx Bombers, while Senators manager Bucky Harris counters with lean lefty Chuck Stobbs. Mickey Mantle has recovered from his knee injury and will be in the lineup. And the Minneapolis Lakers won their third straight National Basketball Association title last night with an 87-80 victory over Syracuse. It crushed the Nationals' rags-to-riches playoff bid. Lakers charter member Bob Pollard, who started with the club in 1947, brought home 21 points. Center George Mikan scored 11. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Timmy?
We'll be talking smelting next, campers. Here's the four lads and No Not Much on the Evening Gather Round Show.
I don't want my arms around you, no, not much. I don't bless the the stars don't need the sky. I won't love you longer than the day I die. You don't please me when you squeeze me, no, not much. Thank you.
Much on KUWS.
What do you think you're doing with the fishing pole?
Hey, what do you think I'm doing? I'm going snout fishing, so I brought my fishing pole. The name's not Jay Fisher for nothing.
All right. A fishing pole for smelting? I suppose you brought a tackle box, too. You're brilliant. You're just brilliant. But I'm going to have to take you under my wing, even though you are some type of union rabble-rouser.
Yeah, I think it's better for all concerned that I do the said taking under the winging.
What's wrong with a fishing pole, and how come you have all these dip nets? And what's with the garbage cans?
He's not only a Democrat, but he's a rookie at smelting.
Oh, boy.
Thing is, Jay, smelt are a different breed of fish. They're small, just 6 to 9 inches long. And a school of smelt is something to behold.
If I may steal a line from the sports page, we'll seine the sizable, slippery smelt along the shores of Lake Superior.
Not bad.
Fact is, 2,000 people are expected along Park Point tonight, and the hot spots on the south shore are the Port Wayne Fishing Pier and along the beaches in Ashland.
But what's the garbage cans for?
Look, man, this is a big deal.
Big deal.
People come from all over the country for the smelt run.
As far away as Iowa, I'm told.
And North Dakota. You see, rainbow smelt are silver-colored fish not native to the Great Lakes, but from Europe, accidentally escaping from a Michigan lake, thus spreading into all the Great Lakes, including Lake Superior in 1946.
This was a commie plot that backfired. They thought it would cripple our capitalist-slash-fishing society, but instead, there are millions of these buggers out there just for the netting.
With people coming from all over the country, including Iowa.
What isn't a commie plot, Colonel?
There are more commie... There's plots, and there are more plots by commies than in graveyards.
As I was saying, the smelt generally run in mid to late April, entering streams at night.
Because they're vampire fish?
Vampire fish.
I'm still working on the more commie plots than graveyards.
No. See, smelt are light sensitive, so they run after dark.
Then let's get smelting, fellas?
All right. You gather up the pails, garbage cans. McPeterson, you get the tubs.
I think he means you, Ray.
And Gertie, Gardonio, you get the rubbers.
Oh, you mean the waiters. I'll get the waiters.
Too much waiting, not enough smelting. McMutton, grab the nets.
That would be you, Lou.
Pardon me?
But the garbage cans, what's with the trash cans?
You catch so many, you can fill a garbage can.
Sounds like I'm out of time if I'm going smelting. Stay tuned for As We See It, the American Federation of Labor.
An excellent production, very important to our American way of life.
Yeah, sounds pinko to me.
California Congressman Chet Holyfield will give his thoughts on the latest H-bomb tests. And then Minnesota Congressman Hubert Humphrey will talk about the growing unemployment problem. For Lou Martin and the gang, this is Sim Michaels reminding you to keep the campfire burning.
We'll have a nice campfire on the Wisconsin Point Beach tonight.
Say, we've got all this stuff. What are you bringing, Raffy?
Brewskis, of course. And enough lollygagging. We gotta hurry or Charlie Escalade and those dang fins will take all the best spots.
Dang fins hogging all the best spots.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1954, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Joel Anderson, John Munsell, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1954 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegraph. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.